Shank Bagley. Shank Bagley. Shank Bagley. Hello and welcome to Shapbaggly, an old Lincolnshire adjective to describe absolutely anything loose and disorderly, which sums up this Lincolnshire lass quite nicely. In a moment, we'll hear from an incredible foodie couple who have been through the mill somewhat, but remain as strong as ever together. We're given one of Switzerland's secret recipes and meet a man on a mission when it comes to flying the flag for fish. First though, with it being episode 18, here are a few other things with the same number. Inches in the diameter of a basketball ring. Tons of smoked salmon eaten at Wimbledon in 1990. And the time in seconds it took Pete Zawinski of Canada to eat 3 chocolate eclairs. I reckon I'd give him a run for his money. Hope all is well with you wherever you're tuning in. Last week I did have an incident with my eye. Well, I've gone one better. Heading home from a food festival Sunday night, so we'd be packed up and all the kit. And it was about 7:30 and Glyn's just clearing a space for me at the front of the van so I can get in. And tries to fit a solid plastic container above the sun visor. He misses and it drops right on the bridge of my nose, right at the top. Needless to say, little sore. It's made a mark. Fortunately, no black eyes as yet. Well, apart from the bags underneath them. It was Mole Food Festival where we were, in North Wales, and that's where I caught up with our first guest, Graeme Tinsley, MBE, Executive Chef of Carden Park Hotel in Cheshire. Graeme has quite the CV, including working at the 5-star Atlantis Sheraton Hotel in Zurich and the Dorchester in London under Anton Mosiman. He was headhunted to develop the first 4-star hotel in North Wales, played a key role in designing, opening and developing where he is today, which is one of the country's leading golf and spa resorts. He captained and later managed the Welsh culinary team on the world stage, winning many accolades, and his work with youngsters in the industry is outstanding. So what do I ask him about? Yep, his hugely popular overnight oats recipe. Although I'll let Graeme tell you the official name.
Well, it's a traditional Bercher muesli,
which
is a Swiss-style muesli, and it's a classic. You know, I got that recipe when I lived and worked there in the early 80s, and I fell in love with it. I loved it, and I asked the guys in the kitchen for the recipe, and, you know, they wouldn't give you the recipe, but the pastry chef was Canadian, and he spoke a bit of English. He spoke good English, yeah. He was French-Canadian. So I asked him for the recipe. He said, I'll give you the recipe, but you've got to come and spend a day in the pastry with me and work for nothing. So I went and worked for nothing for the day, and I got the recipe and I brought it back. And everywhere that I've been as a head chef or an executive chef, I've put it on the menu. So I've had St. David's Hotel Muesli, Castle Hotel Muesli, Carden Hotel Muesli. So it is, and it's lovely, it really is. You know, if you make it with double cream, it's quite rich. But you can lighten it up by using yogurt, and you can put whatever fruit and seasoning you want to use. And it is the recipe that customers ask for the most. So what we do is, at the station in the restaurants, the head waiter station, we have them all printed out ready because you know people are going to ask for them.
What's the secret of it? You've kindly let us have a recipe and so folk can see it.
It's quite trendy now calling it overnight oats. Yeah. But it's an overnight porridge recipe, and then the next day you put whatever fruit you want in. Obviously we sometimes have people who've got nut allergies, so we'll omit the nuts, not put the nuts in there, because obviously we serve that in the restaurants on a buffet table, so we'll take the, if we know we've got a nut allergy, we'll put it. But you can do whatever you want. The quantities work, the amount of milk, cream or yogurt and orange juice works the amount of oats that's in that recipe. So it's fail safe.
I love watching you really love your Asian cuisine, and you've got your lad living out in Singapore, and you've the most beautiful colour, you've just come back, haven't you, from Bali.
Yeah.
What is it about that country and their cooking that just gets you?
I think it's the simplicity. I think it's the quick cooking methods, because everything's put together at a minute, you know. It's obviously it's the sun. So the sun is wonderful. But yeah, it's the freshness of the ingredients, the complexity of the marrying up of the different ingredients, like the ginger, the garlic, and the chili, and the coriander, the fragrancy. And no matter where you go around Asia, everything is slightly different. So for instance, in Indonesia, the fourth most populated country in the world, there's 17,000 islands in Indonesia. It's incredible. So they'll all have all their own different things. So Asia spans from the harshness of the curries in the top of India down to the fragrance of the curries down in, we make a nice Lasca, which is beautiful, and it's a carrot-based curry.
Carrot.
So it's made from grated carrots, lots of fragrance with the lemongrass, whereas if you go to India, then you've got all the garam masalas and things like that make it a little bit more harsh and robust. The curries down in Indonesia are very light and delicate and fragrant.
The ones you did today, people were watching and they come up and they ask for those recipes, but you make it look so easy. Do you ever just have beans on toast at home, Graham?
I'd rather have a chicken carcass and a bag of cheese and onion crisps.
Chicken carcass?
Honest to God, that's my wife will tell you. I love a chicken carcass because I will find meat on a chicken carcass when everybody's had all their bit. I love my cheese and onion crisps, and I love toasted sourdough, and I love the caramelization when you toast sourdough. And then put heaps of butter on it. It's beautiful.
Chicken carcass and crisps. Thank you to Graham. Lovely to see him again. And huge thanks for sharing his recipe. I'll put it onto Shat Bagley's Instagram and Facebook pages. And do let me know if you try it. It was our first time at Mould. Visited one of their chemists while I was there. While I'm on a roll of incidents. I was stood in the queue next to a lady, similar age to me. Air conditioning was on. And I have to say, we were there a while. She had to put a jumper on whilst I was quite enjoying the cool. So spot the one who's on HRT. Time for our next guest, and it follows a conversation we had on Shat Bagley a few weeks ago when we discovered that all of Cardigan Bay whelks are shipped to South Korea. We'll hold that thought as we meet Mike Warner, who's a passionate advocate of the UK fishing industry and is one of the country's leading authorities on seafood sustainability, seasonality and traceability. Cardigan whelks are just one example of what happens to our fish.
80% of the seafood we produce in the UK does get exported, so it's my passion to you know, A, entertain people with enlivening stories and enthusiasm for eating British seafood, but also to promote it at a level where people really want to try it, you know, rather than just eating cod and haddock and tuna and prawns and all those imported commodities that we, you know, were available at the supermarket. People actually want to go out and be adventurous and go to an independent fishmonger or go to a fishing harbour and find out what's happening there, you know, and, you know, a bit like agriculture, really, you know, people learning about the field to fork story, it's just as important learning about net to plate.
We haven't got anything like that, so what you're doing is just one chap, you need a bit of help. What can we do? You mentioned the fish merchants, but there's not many of those anymore.
No, there's not. I mean, I think what we need to do, I mean, sometimes there are some great food festivals, seafood festivals around the UK, but they're all in coastal locations. And of course, at a seafood festival, you're generally preaching to the converted, because people go there because they love seafood. So what I want to do is take the seafood story, but to other food festivals, you know, where there isn't representation of the fishing industry, where there isn't a shop window there for the seafood sector. So that's why I've developed the seafood stage, really. I think we can take that and upscale it and go to other county shows, food festivals, BBC Good Food. You know, I don't see why we can't get into these events and just talk to people about what's being landed on their doorstep. You know, there's no need to go and buy frozen tilapia from Southeast Asia or, you know, king prawns imported from Madagascar when we have wonderful wild bass and we have wonderful langoustine from Peterhead right on our doorstep. So, you know, it's and of course that goes back to the producer, and it goes back to supporting their communities, and that's most important for me.
Because we hear that when us Brits go abroad, certainly to the Mediterranean, and they go, oh, it's gorgeous fish, it's ours.
Yeah, a lot of the time it is. So things like langoustine, squid, cuttlefish. I mean, the bulk of our cuttlefish catch down in Brixham in Devon goes to Italy. But these guys, the Mediterranean countries, the Greeks, the Italians, the Spanish, the Turks, you know, they have this wonderful seafood eating culture, which we seem to have lost. The late and great Keith Floyd, you know, when he was about, he had a wonderful line which he came out with in his Floyd on Fish series. And he said, when it comes to eating seafood in the UK, we've lost the nerve of our grandparents. And I think that holds very true. And I think it's not as bad as it was. You know, we are getting back there. We've got some fantastic chefs who are doing some wonderful things, not just with British seafood, but with all the seafood that we have in the UK. It's imported as well. But for me, it's all about British consumers and British producers and British independent retail and quality. And quality, where there's quality, there's always passion.
What about schools? Because I remember at school, I mean, I'm a Grimsby girl. And so fish was kind of what we grew up.
Very heavily, yeah.
But I don't think it's taught in schools, and surely that's where it needs to start.
It does, and I think capturing children's imagination at a very early age is really important. And I think I've seen it firsthand. In Suffolk, we have something called the School Farm and Country Fair, which we hold every April on the Suffolk Showground. It's for 4,000 local school children. They get bused in from their villages and from their towns. The buses are sponsored by local companies, and they get to come and see a day of food production and what happens in the countryside. And that's really important. And we've done little collaborations there on seafood as well, with the Billingsgate Seafood School with CJ Jackson, and that's worked really. So we're going to do that again this year, and it's amazing when you get children up close and personal to fresh or even live shellfish. Live seafood and fish which are there in all their sort of resplendent wholeness and glory, where they've come just straight off the boat. You know, it does inspire them, and they ask questions. But more importantly, their teachers ask the questions as well, because they have as much knowledge about it as the children, literally. So it's the children, definitely, they're an easy call, really. If you get them in front of fish, it's very easy to inspire them and to enthuse them. It's their teachers who want to be able to take that story. We want them to take that story forward. And so the education falls as much on them as it does on the children.
So for us at home then, use a fishmonger and ask questions. That's what they love. They love asking questions.
Do. Absolutely. Always ask questions. You know, don't feel intimidated. You go into a fish shop. I mean, we purposely don't put any signage on our fish. So everything's laid out on the slab. It changes every day. You know, it changes every week, depending on what the boats are landing. We don't put any prices on. We don't put any labelling on. And so we encourage our customers to actually ask. And we make it an environment where they feel comfortable asking. So it's good old-fashioned customer service, if you know what I mean. Everybody gets treated the same, whether it's Lord so-and-so buying his lobsters and turbot for his dinner party, or whether it's a little old lady from the village coming in for a pound of sprats. You know, everybody gets treated the same, and I think that's really important.
We had a chef on, so the last one that's just gone, and a brilliant idea. I asked him about fish. He does support fish, and he said he had red gurnard on the mitt. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted it. So we did some research, Mike. And is it sea robin? It's
yeah,
also
robin,
known
as. Yeah, that's right. It's the American name for it. Yeah. Yeah.
His customers didn't eat the gurnard.
But they ate it when it was called sea robin. Yeah. And that rebranding has been very important. It's the same as pilchards, Cornish pilchards, which probably 15 years ago were rebranded Cornish sardines. And suddenly the whole dynamic changed, because rather than the old pilchards in tomato sauce that used to get in a can, you know, that image suddenly was dispelled, and people then thought, oh, sardines, grilled, you know, tapenade, salsa verde, glass of vino, sitting on the terrace, you know, with some grilled sardines, and the whole sort of paradigm shift. So so rebranding is great. I'm a bit of a traditionalist, so I like to call fish by their proper name, but then I know I can sell them, so I know I can show people, tell them exact, because accuracy of information is everything to me. If you're not telling it right, then don't bother.
Mike Warner, I could listen to him for hours. If you're in the UK, Mike will be at Aldborough Food Festival in Suffolk this weekend with his seafood stage. Well worth a visit. And I'll put Mike's details onto Shap Bagley's Instagram and Facebook page, so you can keep up to date with what he's up to. I have to say, thank you ever so much for getting in touch this week. I put on the Battenberg cake last time, as I spotted it in a 1930s recipe book, but under the disguise of being called a Russian cake. Thank you for your suggestions and thoughts. Libby says on Facebook, the Battenberg family were German, Hessian. Maria of Hesse married Alexander, son of Tsar Nicholas, the first of Russia. Maybe that's why. So lots and lots of these suggestions. So thank you on Facebook. Also on Instagram, thank you to Richard. The Battenberg dynasty had a member who served in the Imperial Russian Army. Maybe something in that. And then Marrows and Barrows says, wasn't it renamed Balmoral Cake at 1.2? Do you know, I really don't know. Hi to Denny T. Vintage says, gorgeous image. And Avashi says, Battenberg always reminds me of the Great British Bake Off Series 2. Such a fun challenge, never made it since. Yes, Avashi, who was a previous contestant on this podcast, was indeed in Series 2 of Bake Off. So obviously bringing a few unfortunate memories back. Do apologise for that, Avashi. Speaking of Bake Off, it is back. Is it next Tuesday? And then I think in America, is it the day after or the week after? So enjoy. This week, I've come across Practical Dietetics by Alida Francis Patty of 1918. First published, though, in 1903. And it's all in reference to diet, health and disease. And hats off to her. She included calorie counts with her recipes, which I don't think I've ever seen before. Certainly not that early on. Looked into it, and indeed her work had been selected by scholars as being culturally important. So good on you, Alida Francis Patty, certainly ahead of your time. Now, our final guests on Chatbagley are an inspiration to us all, wonderful Pervin and Cyrus Toddywaller, OBE, husband and wife team, founders of and chef patrons of Cafe Spice Namaste in London. Usually, Cyrus will do a cookery demonstration and Pervin will be in the audience, often heckling. So I decided to invite them both up to demo at the same time at the recent Ludlow Food Festival. Pervin is a chef in her own right and an honorary Dame d'Escoffier, philanthropic society of professional women leaders in the fields of food and hospitality. Cyrus is regularly on the television, is the author of several books, including the recent redesign of the popular Mr. Toddywaller's Bombay, available now. Next year, they celebrate their Ruby anniversary after first meeting whilst working at the Taj Mahal Intercontinental Hotel. But who made the first move?
I'd asked him out for a movie, but not as my... I had no intentions, and it is with my hand on my heart, absolutely. Oh, that's cheeky, Cyrus. If I didn't have a heart, I wouldn't be with you for 40 years.
This is why you're with me.
Because I don't have a heart.
If you had a heart, you'd run away. And catch somebody else.
No way.
Excuse me, you haven't got to 40 years yet. We keep saying this. I know, next year.
But we're forgetting I met him 3-4 years before we got married. I met him when I was not even 18 years old. Not everybody knows that.
Yeah, but
he's
See, in those days, cradle snatching was a fashion.
That's what our son said, you know.
Yeah,
So how old were you?
Well, I was under 6 years old.
So he was 23.
Yeah.
Okay. I was then 18, and then we got married when I was 22. Mm-hmm. I had my older one at 22, 23.
Yeah.
There goes.
So we got a 37-year-old and a 33-year-old now.
Okay. Well, you don't look bad on it. Which one's the model? Because one of them's a model.
Yeah, the model. The
joke is that the younger one is the actor, as well as he does voiceovers. And he always reminds his father that he has got more titles on Amazon than his father has in books. And he's done a lot of commercials and things like that.
So he's the one into media.
Yeah.
Okay.
The older one is very shy in that respect.
The older one has done
But he is very, very creative.
Yeah.
He's the one who saved our bacon. He's done the entire restaurant up literally for us. So he saved the bacon when mom and dad went almost bust, you know. Well, we went bust, but we had no money to fall back on.
Was this when you had to lose your restaurant?
We lost the restaurant. Mm-hmm. We had to move. So all at the same time.
Yeah, we lost the restaurant. Cyrus became very sick. And at the same time, we had to get out. So, and we were in so much way over our heads. So we had to we had to get some mortgages back again. So we literally started way back again from the bottom now, and had to get an investor in and things like that. So it's not been easy.
Which is why we can't get the car repaired.
Yes. I haven't brought that up, had I? No, there's a car. Is it how many thousands of pounds of damage?
It's about three thousand plus. Neighbor, when I was pulling out, they suddenly noticed it. His son noticed it and of course pointed. I thought I had a flat tire because they're pointing down there. And I stopped the car. I said, "What's up? Have I got a flat?" He's saying, No, you got this damage. Oh, he's saying, "I got married to a bollard," I said. And we ended up in a divorce, I said. The bollard didn't like me.
So we learned today that you reversed into a friend's porch.
Yes.
Ended up in the living room, whatever.
Well, that's what his joke is. But I really shook the foundation of the entrance up.
He had to do it again.
He was doing it anyway, Pearl.
No,
come on.
No. Come on. Let's call him and...
Jimmy, you know. Jimmy always makes one story, he makes it bigger than it is.
But so am I right in thinking, Cyrus, the £4,000 worth of damage is all you, lovely?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely him. My car's fine.
But I'll tell you what. When she did that to our old car once.
Excuse me, we are going back how many years now?
Years.
See, somebody says,
many
no,
years.
Don't forget.
I'll
91.
Tell you a joke.
Because 91.
You, not 91.
Of course it was
the
91.
The Peugeot was not 91.
Not Peugeot. Later. Oh, the Peugeot.
So, no, the Audi, forget what you
forget 40 years next year, you two. Come on, yeah. We're going to get
I know, you keep reminding me. You're worrying me now.
She tried to... We had a very small garage. And I used to reverse the car into it and put the car against one wall so I could come out. Door only opened a bit. She tried it one day. She went straight into the wall.
Broke the tail lights and all.
The tail light got smacked and she stopped. But our little fellow, the rascal that he is, yes. So I go home late at night, maybe 12:30, 12:15, he's awake. He said, shh, what are you doing awake? He said, come here. I've got to tell you something, he said. I said, what's that? He's saying, you know, your wife tried to destroy your car today. And I'll tell you what, she swept all the broken pieces of glass and she's hit them, but I kept them for you. You won't have a look, he said.
No.
So you can fire her in the morning. But she's already called me and told me she banged the car. I said, forget it. Cars get banged all the time. Just, it's okay. But next day he says, did you tell her? I said, you just look sad in front of him. He was so thrilled that she got told off.
He's one interesting.
He's a character.
Yeah, he still is actually. He's all moving house been. Today, by the way.
Oh, gosh.
He's moving house. He's moving in with his girlfriend.
Who's been...
Jamshid, our older one, is helping him like anything.
So the big brother, always.
He's always a good kid.
Yeah.
Well, you're a good team, aren't you, as a family? Yeah. That's the important thing.
Absolutely.
The restaurant, we know, was 20 plus years, wasn't
26.
It?
26.
27 years this year.
And it was
14th of November.
26, we moved. 26 years we moved away, Cyrus. Yeah, 93,
yeah.
So 95 from...
And it was basically somebody took it on and said, you got to go.
The landlord sold the building. Yeah. So new owners came in. They wanted the building. That's it.
But they were a legal firm. And our lawyer said, don't fight them. In spite of that, we did try. Mm. Just waste of money.
But where you are now,
it's beautiful.
The location's beautiful.
It is.
All we need is to get the old business back.
Yeah. It's taking time.
It'll take time. But we get there. We are further away.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So people think you are far away, but it's not.
Yeah.
But they think you are far away. We have, I think, the best collection of reviews on all the sites. The people are just, the reviews are fantastic, which is very comforting and very, it makes you feel really nice. But we need more people through the doors now. And that's all we are waiting for. And it's going to happen.
It will happen. You two are too good.
We're there most of the time, so it should happen.
You've
nothing to look at both of us squabbling at each other.
How do you make... I mean, Glyn and I work together.
Yeah.
And you obviously...
You should know that.
Yeah. But
he just says yes.
That's what I do. No,
sorry.
I say yes all the time. I say yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
So sorry for you.
You should feel... For all these years. I know you don't, but still.
I should.
Do you? I know it's difficult because one day you'd like to do.
Soon.
Yeah, I keep mentioning the retirement word. He's totally ignoring
it. No, I don't want him to retire because if he retires, he'll die. But that's what he told me, and I agree with him.
Yes.
But you want We're in such a situation that financially you cannot just walk up and unless you just sell up everything. Sometimes you feel that you want a few days to relax and do things, and you know, I mean it's a stupid thing.
Sometimes you just think that just, you know, what have why just now what was just one done so wrong that you never have good fortune coming? Yeah, we definitely need a change of fortune because we want to travel, want to see the world, want to experience more cooking. I want to write a lot more about different cuisines.
We love it, isn't it?
Different experiences, how much I can, and I need time for that.
I was hoping the kids would get married and have grandchildren. I'll say, I'm looking after the grandchildren. I'm the designated carer. But no such luck.
Such special people and a must visit if you are in London. Kathy Spice Namaste, perched at the edge of Royal Albert Wharf in the historic Docklands. And his books are wonderful too. And as I mentioned, look out for the redesigned version of Mr. Toddywaller's Bombay. It's a must-have, incorporates the best of both classic and modern Indian cuisine. Cyrus and Pervin will also be at Aldborough this weekend, and I, for one, can't wait to see them again. Thank you to all my guests, as always, and to you for getting in touch. Really love hearing from you, be it via social media or email, podcast@theshackbagley.co.uk. And if you feel the urge to leave a review, please don't fight it, and hope you're following or subscribing too, as it does help when I invite guests to join us. So that's it for another week. Thank you for listening, and see you next time. Right then, eye injured, nose injured. Bubble wrap might be the order of the day.